It's 4:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, the new Barbie Loves Girl Scouts doll hit the shelves last week. Today we talk about the controversial partnership between the two. Right now, having a hard time reaching our guest right now, so we have a day thematic call-in for you. Veronica, earlier you saw that today is the anniversary of the release of the movie Animal House.
Animal House, right, was released on this day in 1978. A summer movie, quintessential summer movie, maybe a little bit of, well, a lot of frat humor in there as well.
It pretty much defined frat humor, I think.
But summer is movie season, so we're wondering, what do you think of? Where does your mind go when you think of the quintessential summer movie? Is it Animal House? Maybe, maybe not. You can call and tell us what you think about Animal House, too. But we're wondering, what to you says summer? What movie do you go back to, maybe in the dead of January, when you want a little bit of a reminder about summertime? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Get it going there and tell us what you think.
And we've heard on the show things like Jaws setting the stage as the big summer movie, the blockbuster. You don't have to call it a blockbuster, though, but a movie that, for whatever reason it is, says summer to you. Something you have a fond memory of, maybe a first summertime movie memory, drive-ins. If you remember those, they're still out there. I know. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. 800-642-1234. I remember Smokey and the Bandit, actually, as a drive-in. It must have been summer because it was warm.
See, here again, I'm a decade younger than you. I have no recollection of that movie.
Smokey, you know what it is, though.
Kind of.
Burt Reynolds, and he's...
Is there a chimpanzee in that movie?
There's no. I think it is a chimp-free movie, actually.
No, you're just kidding about the decade, by the way. I wish it were a decade.
It wasn't that.
So here, what about this one? This is one we can both share, and hopefully lots of other people as well. The Karate Kid. To me, that is a quintessential summer movie. You've got, you've even got the song Cruel Summer playing in the background. Lots of... people playing in the waves on the seashore, Ralph Macchio kicking some butts, doing some karate. It's perfect. To me, that is a great summer movie from my past.
Well, if you remember Sweeping the Leg or other great movie moments and summer movie memories, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Having trouble reaching our actual guests, so we're looking for your help this next 5-6 minutes. Call in now with a great summer movie or one you can recommend that we check out in the world of DVDs and Netflix. What is one movie you've got to watch before the summer is over? 800-642-1234.
Action adventure seems to be what summer is all about when it comes to movies, and Raiders of the Lost Ark came out in the summertime, launched a big franchise that continues to this day in various iterations. That's one that people have certainly liked over the ages, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we're seeing also Ghostbusters, another classic with Bill Murray. Was Bill Murray in Animal House as well?
No. No,
John Belushi
was in it, yeah, but not Bill Murray. Though you can correct us if we're wrong at 800-642-1234. Your calls are coming in now. We'll get to the phones in just a minute with some favorite summer movie memories. 800-642-1234 or a quick email at talk@wpr.org. We've got Mary on the line in Cadott now. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling. What is your summer movie suggestion?
Oh, definitely Grease.
Oh, Summer Lovin'.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I could sing along with every bit of that movie. Right. That's John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John. Mm-hmm.
Mary, tell me more. Tell me more. What do you like about Grease?
It was probably one of my first date movies. I believe my boyfriend at the time and I went, I don't know, at least twice to see it. I think he went a few more times because he was a big Olivia fan. I just love it. And, you know, how many years later I could, yeah, I can still sing with all the songs also.
What is your favorite song from that movie?
Summer Lovin'.
Summer Lovin'. There you go. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Mary. That was a great one to remember. Fun one to rewatch, too. We're going to go next to Josh joining us in Coon Valley. And by the way, you can get in on this at 800-642-1234. Josh, hi.
Hi. Yeah, my summertime movie is Ingmar Bergman's Wild Strawberries.
I don't know that one, and I don't, when I think Ingmar Bergman, I don't think romping summertime fun. What, tell us about the movie.
Well, it's just a love movie, and there's a lot of outdoor scenes. So, you know, just nature and outdoors.
And is that one you go back to again and again?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Josh, all right. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that one. Line is opened up if you got a busy signal, by the way, at 800-642-1234 with your summer movie memories. Oh, we've got Nicholas in Milwaukee on the line now. Nicholas, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your movie?
I would have to go with Wet Hot American Summer.
Now, that was kind of a satire movie. Almost, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a summer camp satire. Extremely outrageous. It's good comedy.
Paul Rudd was in that before he was famous as being Paul Rudd. A lot of pretty funny people. Not all the names are leaping to my mind now.
Yeah. Chris Maloney, who played Stabler on SVU, he was in it as this insane kitchen cook. Yeah, just a lot of
Janine Garofalo,
kind of
right?
Ensemble cast. Yep, yeah, she was in it as well. Just a great summer movie.
Well, around what year was that one? That doesn't sound familiar to me.
Yeah, do you remember when that came out, Nicholas? That was like, I want to say mid-90s, late 90s, is that right?
Yeah, it was like, late 90s, early 2000s, probably.
Well, thanks a lot for the suggestion, Nicholas. That reminds me, that was kind of a takeoff of all the old camp movies, which reminds me, of course, of Meatballs with Bill Murray.
With Bill Murray.
Set at summer camp. So that's got to be on the list of great
summer
movies.
Maybe Bill Murray is the ultimate summer movie actor.
I'm going to have to ponder that.
I know.
For a while.
Deep questions.
Think on it. Yeah.
Deep questions. All right. Thank you, Nicholas. We're going to go to Charlotte in Madison. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks. What is your vote?
I am going for Caddyshack.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
John Candy.
Nope.
No.
Bill Murray.
No.
Bill Murray,
really?
Chevy Chase. Yeah.
Okay. I really thought John Candy was in that one. Thank you. Okay. What else happens in that one, Charlotte? Remind us.
One of my favorite parts is when Chevy Chase is going through Bill Murray's his house, and he asks about, so I hear you have a swimming pool, and he answers that, well, we have a pond out back.
We've got a pond and a pool. Pond's okay for you, I think, is what Chevy Chase says to Bill Murray.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting
that's
me.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's my band quotes that one all the time, Charlotte. That is a heavily quotable movie. All the Bill Murray stuff. Rodney Dangerfield has some good stuff in there. So I got that going for me.
Yeah, and Bill Murray.
Which
again.
Is nice. Yep, Bill Murray.
Okay, thank you, Charlotte. Appreciate that one. And we're going to go next to Jesse joining us in La Crosse. Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
What is your vote for Ultimate Summer Movie?
Well, this is one I get from one of my best friends. She used to watch it all the time. It's also a really nostalgic movie. It's The Sandlot.
The Sandlot. Is that a baseball movie by any chance?
Yeah, it is. And one of the quintessential scenes from it that really makes me think of summer is the little skinny nerdy kid with the glasses. They're all at the pool, and he pretends to drown so that he can get kissed by the pretty lifeguard. Mm.
I do not endorse that, but thank you so much. The Sandlot, I don't remember that one.
I don't remember that one either, but I'm a sucker for baseball movies,
yeah.
So I'm definitely going to try to check that one out. Appreciate that. Next, and we're going to go, Jesse, to Maria in Heartland. Hi there.
Hi there. My favorite summer movie is Body Heat.
Oh, yeah.
With Kathleen Turner and William Hurt. And it is just an awesome mystery and so atmospheric. It just makes you hot just watching them suffering so much in the heat. And it's just a nice twist at the end.
Very steamy and sultry. Actually, I think that would be a better one to watch in the winter when you need something to warm you up.
There you go.
Right. And Kathleen Turner, she did a lot of action stuff and lots of summer movies, too. I think of her as being one of those in that same...
Romancing the Stone.
Romancing
right?
the Stone, one of my favorite movies. Yeah, it's great to hear her name again. Thank you so much for that, Marie, and thank you to everyone who called in with your favorite vote for Ultimate Summer Movie. We appreciate it.
Mattel's Barbie Love Girl Scouts doll arrived in stores last week. The doll is part of a new partnership between toy company Mattel and the Girl Scouts of America. The doll wears a pink and green uniform, holds a bag with phrases like goal setting and money management printed on it, and wears high-heeled hiking boots.
As part of the partnership, the Girl Scouts are offering their first ever badge from a corporate sponsor. It's the Be Anything, Do Everything badge.
The Girl Scouts say the partnership promotes diverse career opportunities for girls. Some critics have said Barbie is a bad role model, bringing age-inappropriate sexualization and corporate branding.
Susan Lynn joins us now. She's the director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, which has been opposing the Mattel Girl Scouts partnership. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm happy to be talking about this to you.
Well, the Barbie Loves Girl Scouts doll, as we said, hit the stores last week. Can you describe it in your words for us?
Sure. It's a, you know, it's a typical Barbie doll. It's got on pink petal pushers and, you know, a little top and a badge. And since Barbie cannot put her foot down, it's got high-heeled hiking boots.
Mm. And what do you think about how she looks as a representative of, in a way, the Girl Scouts?
Well, it's hard to see how anybody can go hiking in heels, really. You know, the Girl Scouts are about they're about health for girls and leadership. Barbie is really, you know, about an impossible body image, about fashion, and also about consumption. So, you know, it doesn't seem like a good fit to me. And really, I think, you know, Mattel paid the Girl Scouts $2 million to, you know, advertise Barbie to especially their youngest members.
And by the way, we do have a picture of the new Barbie Loves Girl Scouts doll up on the Central Time Facebook page if you want to check it out and see what you think about the way they handled it. And it seems as though this outreach, you know, an attempt to, from the Barbie half of things at least, to attach itself to, you know, a wholesome brand, the Girl Scouts, and maybe bring in some more empowerment. What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, it's, I mean, there are a couple of things wrong with it. First of all, the Girl Scouts shouldn't be advertising anything, and they should not be turning their youngest scouts into walking advertisements for anything. So, you know, whether it's Barbie or not, this partnership is an exploitation of children. So that's one thing to think about. The other thing is that Mattel and Barbie are positioning this as, you know, being about careers and how Barbie has had 150 careers. But really, she hasn't had 150 careers. She's had 150 outfits. And it's not even a question about, you know, whether girls should play with Barbie. They shouldn't play with Barbie. The point is that the Girl Scouts should be commercial-free, and they shouldn't be promoting a doll and a brand that actually undermines their message.
If girls are going to buy a Barbie anyway and may not be exposed to Girl Scouts, why not a Barbie, and why not a Barbie that introduces them to this this way of life that the Girl Scouts goes for, the empowerment, the outdoorsiness, the can-do attitude? Isn't that a positive thing?
You know, Michelle, Mattel, I expect, didn't do this because they were going to be introducing girls to the Girl Scouts. Girls are already introduced to the Girl Scouts. I mean, they know about the Girl Scouts. There are Girl Scout troops, and, you know, so that isn't, you know, the point of this. The point of it, I believe, is that the Girl Scouts needed money, and Mattel, you know, wanted, you know, as you said, to present a wholesome image for Barbie. It is ironic that this came about, you know, just as, you know, Barbie was, you know, prominently featured in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
Right. So you see it as a counter move? Is that what you're getting at, a way to counteract that?
I think that, you know, Mattel is looking to minimize the, you know, the sexualization aspect of Barbie, the fact that she promotes, you know, really an impossible, you know, body type, and that they are doing, you know, everything they can to promote their brand to young children, including co-opting organizations whose reputation is built on being good for girls.
Now, I suppose one thing about this Barbie is that she's not a girl. She looks like she, I guess she could be a leader, a troop leader, but she's not a girl herself, and she does have this, you know, impossible hourglass figure. What kind of message do you see that sending to girls?
We pass our values on to children through the stories we tell them and the toys that we give them. And so when Barbie gets associated with the Girl Scouts, which, you know, has a reputation for promoting health and being good for girls and promoting, you know, good values, the message that girls are getting is that the Girl Scouts approve of Barbie and that Barbie is a good role model for them. I mean, and the thing is that you can't legislate or control what messages kids get from any kind of branding. So, you know, they maybe, you know, if they're getting messages about careers, which I don't actually think they are, but if they are, they're also getting messages that this is how women are supposed to look.
Now, there was some interesting research that your group has been trying to get out there. You've been in opposition to this partnership, and some of this research shows that Barbie, at least according to this one group, this one research vehicle, shows that girls exposed to Barbie seem to feel they have fewer career options instead of more. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So I believe that was out of University of Washington, and what the researchers found is that when girls play with Barbie, even if it's Barbie as in a profession, as opposed to one of the blatantly sexualized outfits that Barbie wears, that actually they end up seeing less options for girls' careers than they do for boys' careers.
I guess we don't know why that is, but why do you think that is?
I think that the focus of Barbie, when girls play with Barbie, that the focus is so much on her appearance and on her body and on accessorizing and on different outfits and on her hair, that the girls, when they play with Barbie, first of all, you know, they admire her and want to be like Barbie, but also that they're not thinking about careers. They're thinking about, you know, what's the next outfit they should put on Barbie.
Well, we've got a caller now. Tina is joining us from Medoro. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I had three sons that went through Boy Scouts, one of them up to Eagle, one still working on it, and a daughter that I enrolled in. Go on with your Barbie doll, whatever, because Boy Scouts actually teach people to do something. If they're not running around selling cookies or selling fruit, it's incredibly overpriced program, and they don't really teach, teaching self-esteem and teach them to make a bloody fire and how to handle a knife. I mean, the books for Girl Scouts are $32. The books for Cub Scouts were $9. And it lasts. The difference in the program, play with the bloody doll. It won't make any difference.
All right. Thank you for your thoughts, Tina. And what do you have to say to that, Susan?
I'm not an expert on Girl Scout troops, but my understanding is that what the troops do really varies from troop to troop. And, you know, we've heard from Girl Scout troops who have refuse to do this badge. I mean, no, it's not actually a badge; it's a patch. They're refusing to promote Barbie, and they're interested in doing other things with girls. So I'm not here to criticize the Girl Scouts or their programming. I'm concerned about this particular partnership.
Well, we are talking right now with Susan Lynn, director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. We're talking about this partnership between Mattel's Barbie brand and the Girl Scouts. There is a Barbie Love Girl Scouts doll, which just came out last week, and there is a Barbie-themed patch that girls can earn as well. And we're wondering what you think about this partnership and whether you approve or whether you think that maybe, as our guest does, it sends the wrong message to girls. We're talking about the partnership between Girl Scouts and Mattel's Barbie brand right now. The Girl Scouts are offering a Barbie-themed Go Anywhere, Do Everything patch, and Mattel is selling a Barbie Loves Girl Scouts doll as part of this partnership. Susan Lynn joins us. She's the director of the campaign for a commercial-free childhood, and in just a moment, we're also going to check in with Lee Snodgrass, communications director of the Northwestern Great Lakes chapter of the Girl Scouts.
And you can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you make of this partnership between Barbie and the Girl Scouts? Good way to draw more girls to the Girl Scouts tent. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go now to Lee Snodgrass. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what do you make of this partnership as part of the Girl Scouts organization? Do you see this as a positive thing?
We really do. When Girl Scouts of the USA considers any partnership, the first thing that they ask is, will this benefit girls? And girls play with dolls, and girls play with Barbie, and we want to be where the girls are so that we can expose them to the great opportunities of becoming part of Girl Scouts and what that organization has to offer.
And what about what critics are saying, what we've been hearing from Susan Lynn, that this is, first of all, an unrealistic body image, not necessarily a good role model for girls and, you know, who can hike in high-heeled boots?
Right. Well, Barbie always does sort of take it up a notch fashion-wise. We do acknowledge that this Barbie is not for all families, and people can choose to buy her and have her in their homes or not. But really what the Girl Scouts believe is that we have 59 million Girl Scout alumni in the world, from Sheryl Sandberg to Condoleezza Rice, and we think that girls look to these real women as role models, not to dolls. We believe that personifying Barbie and suggesting that she's a role model gives it far more influence than it really is. She's a tool for imaginative play that lets girls explore some of the possibilities that are available to them as they move into the world.
Then why choose Barbie, because she's such a controversial choice, if you have these real-world role models like Condoleezza Rice and, I think you said, Sheryl Sandberg? Why not let girls look to those models instead of this idealized version?
Well, one of the previous callers did talk about some of our programming books, and all of those do talk about those women and talk about the leadership skills and qualities that they have. But really, Barbie is very iconic. It's hard to deny that Barbie is not a part of the childhood of most girls. Most mothers growing up remember their Barbie doll and playing with it. And this really was an opportunity for us to get in front of new audiences through that love of Barbie and expose girls to the idea of Girl Scouts. And as you've mentioned, she's accessorized with things like a bag that talks about the five financial literacy skills that they gain when they sell cookies. And she's given, you know, albeit high-heeled hiking boots, you're right, she is giving the appropriate gear to be ready to go out into the wilderness and that kind of thing. So Barbie was a logical choice in terms of being something that would appeal to girls and expose them to our organization.
How is the Girl Scout Barbie selling, do you know?
The Girl Scout Barbie is actually not yet in our shop or in local stores, but we have had lots of inquiries, and obviously the national media has brought it to the attention, and we have a lot of families that are interested and excited about it.
And do you expect it, or projections that Barbie will be a recruitment tool and she will bring new girls into the Girl Scout organization? Is that the hope?
I don't think I'd go so far as to actually label it as a recruitment tool, but we do know that there is obviously an appeal to her, and the girls who are already Girl Scouts and are already playing with Barbies at home are excited in some of the sort of behind-the-scenes research where they've exposed girls to the Barbie early on. The kind of things that they were doing and playing with her were like, you know, let's go sell cookies, and I'm going to put the tent up, and I'm going to build the campfire. So girls were already really excited to sort of do some of those things that they do in real life in sort of a play-acting creative way with their friends.
Well, Lee, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Lee Snodgrass, Communications Director of the Northwestern Great Lakes Chapter of Girl Scouts. And we continue on now with Susan Lynn, who is the Director of Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. And we've got a lot of callers on the line, too. So we're going to go first to Jerry in Waukesha. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, like I explained to the woman that answered the phone, my son's a Boy Scout. He's almost a Star Scout, which is like two ranks below Eagle. And they don't have any G.I. Joes or any Stone Cold Steve Austin, wrestling memorabilia figures. They don't have any role models. The role model is their character and the Scout Oath, which I can't recite from memory here now.
Sure.
But to me, it's a crock. To me, it's a marketing campaign for Mattel. Maybe it's a profit center for the Girl Scouts of America because they get a portion of those proceeds from the sales of those dolls.
All right.
It's the wrong role model to me. Like I told the lady that answered, it's a little girl's fantasy.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts. And it's an interesting allegory there. You know, not so much of a stretch. The Boy Scouts don't have a Ken doll who's a Boy Scout Ken doll. So do you think that there's something about girls and dolls that the Girl Scouts are honoring here? Or are they taking this too far? Susan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were talking to me. Well, you know, I absolutely agree with Jerry, and I'm sorry that Lee's not still on the phone, because one question I have is, would the Girl Scouts have entered into this partnership, which includes not just the doll, but turning their youngest scouts into walking advertisements for Barbie? Would they have entered into this if Mattel hadn't been paying them $2 million? Also, you know, the idea that Barbie is just a doll, I mean, research actually belies that. Research shows that girls 5 to 8, which is the exact age targeted by the Barbie-Girl Scout partnership, that those young girls who are exposed to Barbie report more dissatisfaction with their own bodies. And also, when the American Psychological Association Task Force on the Sexualization of Girls came out, they singled out dolls like Barbie for presenting a limited, quote, objectified sexuality that is particularly harmful to girls, to the doll's target market, which is, 5 to 8-year-olds.
Well, we appreciate that call, Jerry. And we're going to move next to Bonnie joining us in Rice Lake. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just, once again, you mentioned the research behind the dolls. I think that there's a lot more that goes into a young girl's life other than just playing with Barbies, because the Barbie doll is a doll. It started back when I was young, the 60s and 70s. I played with Barbie, and it no way defined who I was or who I became. In no way did I ever think that my body was going to be like Barbie doll.
So you're saying there's too much brouhaha over this, putting too much weight on a single doll.
I think so. I think there's just too much weight being put on this doll. It is a doll. I was in Girl Scouts. I was a Boy Scout leader. I think the important aspect is, what are parents going to do with the doll? How are they going to help their child? How are schools, fostering positive body images of girls? Not just a doll. It is a doll. That's
right.
What it is.
All right. Thank you, Bonnie. Interesting take there. Susan, Bonnie saying so much goes into the character of a girl that you can't possibly put it all on a doll.
Well, it's funny when she said that the doll carries too much weight. Some people would say the doll doesn't. Barbies don't carry enough weight, I would think. But, I think that Barbie is one particularly popular icon in a world that in a marketing world that really sexualizes young girls, and that little girls encounter sexualized images, just about everywhere they turn. And so the question in this particular campaign, it's not even whether girls like Barbie, they don't like Barbie. The question is, what is the role of the Girl Scouts in children's lives? And should the Girl Scouts be, embracing and promoting and taking money from, a doll that is actually part of the problem of sexualizing little girls and promoting impossible body type?
Well, as Lee Snodgrass said, she said the Girl Scouts want to go where the girls are, and I guess girls, some of them, like Barbie, and the Girl Scouts want to get as many people into the tent as possible.
Well, is it getting people into the tent, or is it the $2 million? I think it's not, I think that both Mattel and the Girl Scouts are being a little disingenuous about this partnership. If the Girl Scouts really believed that Barbie was such a great role model, then they could have, embraced her and promoted her early on. This is a marketing deal.
All right. Well, thank you, Bonnie. Appreciate that perspective. And let's go next to Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how's it going? I really appreciate your guest and the cause that she's, putting forward. My background's in marketing, and the short story is Mattel Corporation does nothing without a complete vetting of every aspect of the marketing plan. It will not put $2 million into anything, let alone $2.50. And I was part of the marketing program when Mattel came in and bought Pleasant Doll Company. And right around that time, the decision was made to kick Ken out of the Barbie house. And the thought that goes into that, of course, is that the authority figure was, and I've raised three girls, so I know that as dads, we are constantly trying to slow down the process of the marketing arm reaching into our homes and convincing our girls that they need to be more and they need to do it more often. And so I'm only coming at it from statement is that the corporations don't just enter into these things without knowing that there's an upside, and the upside is convincing girls to buy products, whether it's Girl Scouts, which is, I feel terrible that they're doing that, or Mattel. And that, I'll leave your guests to comment on that.
Thank you so much, Bob, for your thoughts. And Susan, Bob, echoing some of what you've said there about asking too much of girls, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate Bob calling in. It's always heartening to hear to people in marketing who, you know, believe that there should be ethical limits about marketing to children. And to Bob, if you can email us at ccfc@commercialfreechildhood.org, I'd love to hear more about, Mattel and the Pleasant Company. I also remember Ken being kicked out of the Barbie house, and in fact, now he's back in, and that's another whole marketing story. This is a marketing deal, plain and simple. If people can go to our website, commercialfreechildhood.org, and sign our petition, because the only thing that is going to stop the Girl Scouts from entering into other partnerships like this, and also from going on with what is a 3-year partnership, so we don't even know what's coming besides, the patch turning little girls into, walking advertisements, or the website, which is filled with Barbie dolls that are, in fact, for sale. We don't know what's going to come, and over 5,000 people have already signed our website, including a lot of former Girl Scouts, parents of Girl Scouts, and Girl Scout troop leaders.
And we have to leave it there. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
We've been talking to Susan Lynn, the director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, talking about the partnership between the Girl Scouts of America and Mattel's Barbie.
It's time for Wisconsin Life. Wisconsin's small town and rural landscapes take center stage in a new photography project. John Scheinman and Julie Lindemann compare and contrast modern Wisconsin with old postcard images they found. It all comes together as the Wisconsin Project.
And we'll be taking your calls, too. What do you think are the most iconic images of Wisconsin? If you had to choose one picture to represent the state, what would it be? What's the most Wisconsin thing in your community? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
We'll take your calls after we hear from reporter Patty Murray on the Wisconsin Project.
The Wisconsin Project is part found postcards.
Most of the ones we find that maybe fascinate us the most are just the photographs of emptiness, really. There's just very little happening in the picture, almost to the point where really somebody took this and why, and it definitely was an illustration to a concept that's lost.
And then you got to think about who sent that postcard.
I think a lot of them that we end up finding never were sent because they had no appeal.
It's the lack of appeal that appeals to John Scheinman and Julie Lindemann. Besides curating postcards from the early to mid-20th century, they take vintage camera equipment to rural Wisconsin and document the modern mundane.
We have quite a few pictures of quick trips, which are absolutely the hub of most small towns. You can buy food, newspapers, milk, treats, hot dogs, it's cheap, gas, and banks, houses. We're really intrigued by vinyl siding. So if we find a particularly attractive house with some really plain, the most plain, subdued vinyl siding where every detail has been obliterated with vinyl siding, we will photograph that, especially if the windows are symmetric. And we always remember one of our friends, our young friends from Manitowoc, telling us that vinyl is final. When you side your house in vinyl, you're there.
Shimon and Lindemann plan to spend the summer combing Wisconsin's horizon, documenting a disappearing agricultural icon.
Harvest Store. So it's the word harvest and then store. Harvest Store.
Those are the looming, shiny, midnight blue metallic silos once built in Wisconsin.
We've been photographing the landscape more so, and the countryside. And one of the things we started to notice slowly is the silos that are on the horizon, and thinking about what does it take to mess with the horizon to that level. Wow, you know, you're just going to put up four big, tall monoliths and totally change the horizon that everyone's going to see. And we were very moved by that.
Because of factory farms, Shimon and Lindemann say harvestors are becoming obsolete.
We have very profound memories of the harvestor coming to our rural area and very prosperous farmers putting them up. And, you know, it was like a big deal. It was a sign of achievement and progress. And this word progress was used a lot. So it's really funny for us, I think, now to see the sun setting on the harvest store. And that is the best time to photograph them, when the sun sets, because they glint in this beautiful way.
They hope the Wisconsin Project blog will help people step back and look at their surroundings in a different light and appreciate the landscape for what it is and what it might become.
Someday there might be a nostalgia for harvest stores, and we'll say, why did we tear them all down?
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. The series is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Find more info at wisconsinlife.org.
We want to hear what you think about this. What images do you think represent Wisconsin? Do you agree that quick trips and vinyl siding represent modern Wisconsin? What about your community? What iconic image best represents your town? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@wpr.org.
We've got Tom on the line and Rhinelander to start us off. Tom, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm not sure. I'd have to give it more thought on what to say is the iconic image of Wisconsin. The iconic image in Rhinelander, of course, is the old glass lantern-domed courthouse downtown, which is really beautiful. What really struck me about this call is it reminded me a couple projects I've had. For about the last 15 years, I've collected old postcards from Wisconsin and Upper Michigan of different river scenes. I'm real into running rivers and fishing rivers, and I've especially looked for postcards of rapids that don't exist anymore because of dams. And I found several of Big Bull Falls in Wausau and the Big Falls in Wisconsin Rapids, and it's really amazing to see what those rivers look like. The other project I've been doing, I spend a lot of time in Upper Michigan, and I've been photographing old buildings there, old, especially Lake Superior red granite buildings, but also just other old buildings that really kind of evoke the past and don't look like they might not last much longer.
Tom, thank you so much. Great projects you're doing. And I think those running rapids of Wisconsin, maybe the ones that are still with us, might be good icons.
All right. We appreciate that, Tom. And we're going to go next to Mike joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What is your vote?
I kind of have an outside perspective. I've only been living in Wisconsin for 6 months. I was recruited from California. So when I think about Wisconsin, or is the, you know, the Badger. So that's
the Badger.
So being an outside perspective here, you know, who's never visited Wisconsin before and just literally moved here 6 months ago.
Huh. Okay, so we've got an objective perspective there, and he says Bucky. That's fair.
Well, is it Bucky or is it like a real badger? I could go either way on that. But thank you so much, Mike, for that call and the suggestion. And belated welcome to Wisconsin, too. David is on the line now in Sun Prairie. David, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, over the last couple of years, one of the iconic images that I see popping up everywhere, whether it's a protest at the Capitol or even in some of the coffee shops, is the socialist slash Marxist fist. You know, the fist, you've seen it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fitting image for Wisconsin because a lot of the people from Wisconsin sincerely like the idea of socialism, big government, and high taxes. So I would have to say the socialist fist could be end up on some kind of a flag representing the people of Wisconsin.
Gotcha. David, a political twist there, maybe a satirical political twist. David, thanks for the call.
And one more quick one here, maybe two. We'll see from Julie in La Crosse. Hi, Julie.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mine is pretty silly. It's the world's largest six-pack here in La Crosse.
I have heard of this six-pack.
Yes, and it's the world's largest. And since we are known as a beer-drinking state, I thought that was rather iconic.
All right. That's a good one. Yeah, I think we've done a segment about that six-pack.
Yeah, right. The history of that. Thank you so much. Time for Paula in Oshkosh. Paula, what is your iconic image of Wisconsin?
Any aerial view of the Door County foliage and color. You can't find it anywhere else.
That is spectacular.
That's a beautiful place to leave it. Thank you so much, Paula. And thanks to all of you for your calls on this. And you can keep the conversation going over at the Central Time Facebook page.